You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King, Celtics beat writer at MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great former WEEI employee and current authority on all things weird Celtics. Oh, let's talk about the week of Jam before we get into this podcast. We're gonna talk a little bit about that article bashing Al Horford. Not really based in fact, not really based in much, but it was an Al Horford bashing. We will react to that. We will give. Actually, Sam's gonna do a dramatic reading of that, which should be classic. And then we've got a bunch of questions from the mailbag. We got hit up, barraged by questions. Actually, the first time around, not too many people responded with questions. Second time around, the whole world wanted in on the podcast.
Oh, Jay, what was the difference between the first time around and the second time around?
It was the timing. It was all timing.
It's got nothing to do that I tweeted out requests for questions and got very little response. I actually got a bunch of rain and junk questions, and then which is probably fitting for my weird week of Celtics Twitter. But to actually get Rain and Jay's questions, we needed the power of your Twitter account.
I just don't think it has anything to do with the power.
So, since when is the kid coming with this false modesty?
I'm actually a modest dude. I feign
arrogance
sometimes. Yeah. By calling myself the kid and calling us the greatest Celtics podcast in history.
So when you call me the great, is that feigning praise?
No, that's real praise. So let's
okay.
Before we continue, let's get into the week of Sam Packard. You were quoted in an Uproxx piece by Sean Hyken about weird Celtics Twitter. You were basically known as the authority on all things Giannis, all things Terry Rozier, all things strange. And then, what was it, 2 days later, you were quoted in a Boston Globe piece about scary Terry Rozier.
That's got to be the much weirder one that I can't really wrap my head around, that I was quoted in the Boston Globe today. But yeah, it's been quite a week for the Jam man. I don't really know how to react because I haven't really changed much. I mean, I feel like going
success hasn't changed you.
I don't believe so. Maybe the listeners can tell me. I mean, I think going and talking to Coley about weird Celtics Twitter up my profile a bit, but. I think it also helps that the Celtics had some downtime and Himmelsbach had to fill some inches on the page and decide to write this story. And if you're going to write a story about Terry Rozier and his popularity, I think Tito has to play into that. And the best part of that story is that instead of the Scary Terry t-shirts, they're originally going to make it's T-Row, not Tito. Which is gold. Like if I had made it all the way that like my created nickname made it onto a t-shirt that he was selling that specifically denounced it. I mean, that's perfect stuff. I was just, that's amazing. Like the fact that he doesn't like it actually makes me like it more because it's become so successful. But yeah, appearing in the Boston Globe, when I got that call from Himmelsbach, I thought he was actually calling about weird Celtics Twitter. And he's like, no, man. So obviously Tito, what else are they calling you about? But It's cool. It's cool to be in the Boston Globe getting credit for creating a nickname that was literally I tried to put on Tyler Zeller.
Yeah, this has really advanced your brand. This week has advanced your brand. The Sam Packard, literally the authority on strange things Celtics. So with that in mind, let's get to your dramatic reading of the Al Horford article. It was in the Big Lead. It was written by, I guess, somebody who typically writes about the Patriots, and he decided to weigh in about Al Horford and just ripped apart Al Horford. Just a completely baseless, totally, totally over the top and wrong article. I had people tweet me saying, I am the biggest Celtics or Al Horford hater. And even I thought that was just insane. So he had
there's one dude who's always up in my mentions complaining about Al Horford. And even I saw a tweet from him being like, that article was crazy.
All right, let's get to the dramatic reading. I'm going to light some candles in my place right now. I feel like
please do
really need to set the mood for this dramatic reading.
Okay. Give me a second. Al Horford isn't all that important to the Boston Celtics. He once served a number of significant purposes for Boston, but the Celtics have outgrown him. While he's getting paid a max contract, he may not be the second best player on the Celtics' active roster. Gordon Hayward will return. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown can polish off the parts of their game. As soon as the Eastern Conference Finals, Horford could be the fifth best player on the team. It's a bit of a stretch, but the fact that it's possible is bad news for the Celtics because they're stuck with Horford for the next 2.5 seasons, and they're going to be paying him max money when they probably wish they could dedicate that contract to someone who is a legitimate star, not a player whose nickname is Average Al because his talent hovers around debatably, this is in quotes, good. That isn't to say Horford wasn't a valuable member of the franchise. He certainly was, and his signing was a turning point for Boston. He and Isaiah Thomas built a powerful duo which turned heads around the NBA. Horford broke the Celtics' free agency drought by joining Boston after Kevin Durant and many others before him spurned the city. Horford was then surely a selling point for Gordon Hayward, so Horford's decision to sign a max deal with Boston was a boon to the franchise. But the Celtics are a radically different team than they were just a year and a half ago. Even though Horford was key in building that team, he is also now hamstringing them. He's one of the least productive max contract players in the NBA. He's the 11th highest paid player in the NBA, but is 105th in points per game, 36th in rebounds, 36th in assists, and 70th in PER. And he initially in this article, he listed his PER as 7, but it's really 17.7. So we'll move on from there. Then he goes, so ellipses, plays a clip from Office Space. And he continues, Horford's defenders will argue he brings leadership and intangibles. That stuff is all well and good, but does that mean Horford's most impressive number is 31, his age? Because his points per game, his rebounds, his assists, and his PER are simply not enough for a max player, even when considering he's pretty good at all of them. It goes on, if the Celtics get a chance to see the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals, Horford's production is going to be what helps this team upset Steph Curry's squad. His leadership and his intangibles aren't going to change the complexion of the series, which will probably end in 5 games. If Horford turns into a 2010 player instead of a 13-8 player in the finals, the Celtics could be looking at a championship. But Horford isn't that guy. He'll never be that guy, and that's a problem for the Celtics. We're trying to get over the considerable talent hump which Golden State has created. To make things worse, the Celtics can't do anything about it. They're stuck with him. They can't trade Horford and his cumbersome contract without also dealing Jaylen Brown or a pick to sweeten the deal. In other words, they're not dumping Horford. They can't sacrifice a future asset to get better now. They've got to ride it out. In the meantime, Horford will be part of the reason the Celtics are practically irrelevant for the NBA championship, because when he, Irving, and Hayward on the court together, they don't comprise a big three. It's just a big two with Hayward and Irving. And there's no such thing as a big two. Unless Horford fights his way up the NBA food chain and explodes with production, and he's been trending downward since the All-Star break, the Celtics will probably spin in place in the NBA's hamster wheel.
Jesus. That was a beautiful, beautiful story, wasn't it? Just
at no point during this entire rant, I really feel like Billy Madison, the guy from The Principal, at no point in your incoherent rambling did you bring one coherent point. May God have mercy on your soul.
He didn't mention
his defense once in the entire time. Oh. The guy who's been legitimately a defensive player of the year candidate, and you don't bring up his defense one time.
Okay, let's name the author's name. We got it. What's his name?
Henry McKenna.
Henry McKenna. My man Hank.
Bruh.
Hank McKenna.
Bruh.
Where do we begin? So first of all, he talks about Al Horford like his glory days were like 10 years ago with the Celtics. Like he didn't just make the All-Star team
last month. Was one of the best 12 players in the East as selected by coaches.
Last month. So it's just, this was just one of the most ludicrous pieces. And then he goes on to say, if Horford is the fifth best Celtics player in the playoffs, that's a huge issue. First of all, if Horford is the fifth best Celtics player in the playoffs, that means Gordon Hayward has come back at full strength.
It's strong.
That means
Gordon Hayward's come back fully ready to play basketball.
That means Jason Tatum has taken an absolute leap over the second half of the season. That means Jaylen Brown has taken an absolute leap. So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say if Al Horford does tumble into fifth place on the Celtics player rankings by the time the playoffs roll around, that is a very damn good thing for the Celtics. As far as all this other stuff, like sure, if Horford averages 13-7 against the Warriors, the Celtics will probably lose in five games. You know why they'd lose in five games? Because the Warriors are the most talented NBA team ever. Not because Al Horford, the Celtics' second best player, only averaged 13-7. This is 2018, people. It's a year, it's a time when we should be discussing the game of basketball intelligently. We have other stats better than points per game.
You don't have to do counting stats. There's things like just net rating. If you look at on-off of every single player, if you look at their net rating with Al Horford on the court and Al Horford off the court, it's demonstrably better with him on the court. If you just look at lineups or the top like ranked lineups in the league in terms of defense rating, Al Horford's in all of them. If you look at the fancy things like block box plus minus or defensive box plus minus, he's like a top five person in that. It's just so lazy and so idiotic, and the blame falls directly at the feet of Lou Maloney. Like, this would not be happening if it wasn't for that guy going on EEI every day and spouting nonsense. And I don't know who else there is to blame. Henry McKenna does not have the gall, the unmitigated gall, to write and submit that article if he didn't feel like he had a safe space to do so with Lou Maloney. He was basically writing that just so Lou Maloney would retweet it, and it is Lou has to feel bad for
Tweeted. He doesn't even agree with it.
I know. That's why it was especially misguided by Henry McKenna.
Even Lou Maloney was like, this Hank guy has gone way too far.
That's what happens, hey, Lou. When you put out bad takes into the world, people will take them and make them even worse.
That was I think we've gone over this before. Al Horford is
in fact good.
But your take about Al Horford is a barometer on how much you know about basketball. If you watch Al Horford play and you think he's average, or if you watch Al Horford play and you think he's some big problem for the Boston Celtics, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know the sport of basketball. You have no idea. He makes the right play almost every single time down the court. He's a top five three-point shooter in the NBA. Do you know what's one of the most valuable traits these days? Spacing.
Shooting
the
from
floor.
A big man.
Shooting from a big man. Gravity. Horford has all of it. He's among the league leaders in assists for a big man.
You know what's another pretty valuable skill is being able to switch multiple positions and guard out on the perimeter as a big man when she's also at lead at.
It's just abominable. And part of me just hates talking about these takes because they're just ludicrous and they're just.
But when you come with the worst one to ever exist, we have to talk about it.
This one was just so steaming hot. We had to discuss. It was.
And so Hank, nothing personal about you. I think you are probably a fine person. It's just your dog shit take and your dog shit article needed to be discussed because they were, for lack of a better phrase, dog shit.
Yeah. Yeah, dog shit. And then on top of it, like, if Al Horford doesn't go to the Celtics, they probably don't get Gordon Hayward.
Hank did mention that a little bit.
But, like, the first sentence was that he's not important to the Celtics. So he's pretty fucking important.
He isn't all that important. See, it's the all that important that allows for some wiggle room here.
Oh, he's not all that important.
The thing is, the crazy is that people get so caught up in the max contract thing and just like don't understand. Like they hear the word max and they're like, oh, he has to be an amazing player. It's like, you know what? That's like what he was going to get paid. If the Celtics didn't pay him, the Thunder were very ready to pay him. The Wizards were very ready to pay him. Like it was just the going rate for a guy of his like caliber. And it happened to happen in a year when the cap was up. Like there's just so much context that there's people just completely ignore because he's a max player. And it's just, I just think they're jealous because he's beautiful.
Let's move on, man. Let's get to some of these questions. We got to move on from the Al Horford hot takes. Even right, though I could spend all day just torturing Hank, but we'll move on.
We got a bunch of questions pouring in, but let me try and synthesize them. A lot of people asking about the bench coming off the in the playoffs. There's a question of who do you think is going to be the best scorer off the bench? Who do you think is going to have more of an impact, Baines or Monroe off the bench? I should be shouting out these people's handles, but it's difficult. There's a lot of them. The J. King bump gave us a bunch of questions. So let's talk about just the bench and the big rotation. Let's start with the big rotation, and I'll shout out Kendall JW because I see his handle right now. Who plays a bigger role versus Toronto and Cleveland, Monroe, Tice, or Aaron Baines?
I think Cleveland will probably be a Tice series. I think just the way that Cleveland spreads you out and puts shooters all over the place, and I think Tice will be the guy. I also thought that against the Rockets, and then Brown was like, yo, Monroe just abused them. So we'll see. Baines, he could theoretically be kind of like in an Amir Johnson role where he starts and plays like 6 or 7 minutes and that's kind of all he does. Brad loves going small, and especially in crunch time minutes, Brad lives for small ball. So I think it's more likely that Tice plays, but Al Horford's going to play a lot at the center spot. We'll see. I mean, that whole rotation, it's kind of a mystery to me what Brad's going to do, to be honest.
I think it's the because of that, I think Monroe has the highest impact or highest likelihood of making an impact just because in the playoffs, the rotation always gets a little bit shorter. And I just think that there are 6 or 7 players, even 8 if you include I'm getting my counting mixed up. But basically, when the Celtics do go small, it's going to be Horford at the 5 and maybe Morris at the 4, maybe Tatum, maybe an even smaller lineup than that. So I don't know. I think if one of the 5s, one of the centers is going to make a big impact, it just has the potential to be Greg Monroe coming off the bench and abusing dudes like he did in that Rocket series. But really, if you're having to rely on one of those 3 guys, I think things have not gone well for you if you're the Celtics, just because their best lineup involves Horford at the 5 and then kind of playing the smaller, more skilled guys from there. So I think it could be Monroe, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, the 3 guys who will definitely get minutes off the bench are Smart, Rozier, and Morris. And I wouldn't be surprised to see at least one of those guys starting at some point in the playoffs. Last year, Brad went small. He went with Gerald Green in the starting lineup. So he's willing to radically change things if he feels the need. And I feel like if he does radically change things, it will be to go small, because that's what Brad Stevens does. Brad likes going small. And in playoffs, teams just force you to go small. They put a lot of skill. They put a lot of speed. And if you can't match up, then you're screwed. I do think this year, for the first time, kind of, the Celtics can go the other way. And if teams go small and if teams try to put out tiny lineups, Brad could just be like, yo,
that's
Monroe,
where Moose comes in.
Yo, Monroe, just abuse these little punks.
Moose.
So Brad's got options. Brad's got a lot of options. The one thing about this roster is it's malleable. He has a lot of different ways that he can utilize guys and a lot of different types of lineups that he can play and be comfortable with.
I would have to agree. Moving on. This is from at Coey Jupes. What are the Celtics doing differently since the All-Star break that is helping the offense? In other words, why is the offense better?
Making shots.
Ooh, make or miss league. Classic case.
some of it's they're just hitting a lot of shots. Terry Rozier is shooting the crap out of it. Marcus Morris shot the crap out of it against the Rockets.
Marcus Smart returned. He's pretty good at offense. I think the numbers have borne that out, that he is a pretty good facilitator in the pick and roll, knows where to be, knows how to find guys, and even though he's a horrendous three-point shooter, still spaces the floor more than you would think. So I think it's a combination of shot making and also just having better players out there on the floor. We're not seeing a lot of Nader, not seeing a lot of Shemmy. And so when you have better players on the court, you're usually better at offense.
Yeah, I think that matters too. Shemmy and Nader, those guys they've been zeros offensively for most of the season. And they haven't given you much. And I'm not saying they'll always be zeros. I'm not saying like they're destined for to be zeros forever, but they just haven't been very good offensively this season. And so it's a big deal when you upgrade from one of those guys to Marcus Smart, who is a legitimately good basketball player. So I do think there's something to that. Just getting Smart back helped the rotation a lot.
All right, we got a bunch of questions actually about Gordon Hayward, so I'm going to try and, again, synthesize them into one, but shouts to Jack Michael, Tiff Tripp, Schematic 247. What are you most excited about Gordon Hayward's return, and what's the kind of minute lineup adjustment that happens when he comes back? Does it? And then also the question is, who does that affect most in the starting lineup, and does it make Tatum or Jaylen Brown expendable?
Okay.
Answer all of those questions, Jay.
First, I want to say shout out to my man Mike Gorman, who is awesome. Like, I love Mike. I love Mike as a person. I love Mike as a play-by-play guy, just a really, really great person and voice for the Celtics. My man's an optimist. My man is a real optimist. After Brad ruled out Gordon Hayward, who only has a little more than a month left to return in the regular season, and who, as recently as a few days ago, was not allowed to do cutting drills on a basketball court, Gorman believes he's coming back. And Gorman said, I believe, basically what he said was, I've been told he's working 8 or 9 hours a day. Why would he do that if he didn't think there was at least a chance he could come back? Maybe he's just a professional. Maybe he's
just
a
hard worker. You can't limit yourself. You have to have the growth mindset. You can't have a fixed mentality that you're not coming back. You have to believe that you could come back, and that's the only approach you can have. I'm with Mike Gorman on this one. I think you can't say – that was actually why I was kind of surprised to hear Gordon or Stevens come out and say that, just because of the whole thing about mindset. Maybe it was just to kind of get the pressure off his return or throw expectations off. But it doesn't surprise me that Gordon Hayward is working his ass off to try and come back, because that would be pretty fucking cool if he did. Like, if he makes at all of an impact this year, it would be amazing.
Okay. Now to the rest of the questions. I think – I mean, he's certainly obviously going to slide into the starting lineup as soon as he's right. And I just think their starting lineup is going to be so, 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 so dynamic. I think with Kyrie Irving, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, and Al Horford, it's going to be just beautiful basketball. There's going to be shooting. There's going to be skill. There's going to be athleticism everywhere, all over the court. It's possible that they'll have 5 40% three-point shooters next year in the starting lineup, which would just be outrageous. And I'm not saying that's likely, but it's possible with that five.
Remember the preseason, how much the ball just like was bouncing? It was wild.
It has not bounced like that since, but it was really bouncing. And I think maybe his biggest impact, although the bench has been great lately, I think one of his biggest impact is that he can run point guard. They plan to run him at point guard with the second unit. That was what they were going
to
do.
Yeah, they plan to put him in the role they put with when they had point Horford.
Yeah.
Just with him with a bunch of bigs. But imagine that with a guy who's actually very, very excellent at being the ball handler. I think it's just – it pushes everyone down the lineup at like one, and it just makes your starting lineup that much better because Gordon Hayward is a legitimate star in this league. So it's going to be amazing. It's actually insane that the Celtics are this good without him. So the kind of potential for his return is absolutely wild right now.
Yeah, it's really, really crazy they've been as good as they have been without him. And I just think, like, staggering him and Kyrie and him and Horford, you'll always have an all-star on the court. And contrary to my man Hank, what my man Hank thinks, Al Horford, very good basketball player. Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, also very talented at basketball, very productive at basketball. So those three guys, when they're all healthy, it's just going to be – there's going to be some beautiful basketball played by the Boston Celtics once Gordon Hayward returns.
The next question is from the Riffs man, Lord and Savior of Weird Celtics Twitter, a great prophet in the Church of Brad Stevens. And he asks, who is better at the end of next season, Tatum or Jaylen?
I'm going to go with Tatum here. I just think Tatum has every skill, every single skill. And I know Jaylen Brown's stronger. I know Jaylen Brown's more athletic. I know Jaylen Brown has shown a great growth curve throughout his 2 years in the league. But it's just hard for me to envision Jason Tatum not taking like exponential steps once he gets a little stronger, once he learns how to hold on to the basketball when he's going to the hoop and not just like let it squirt out of his hands. That's one of the strangest subplots of the season. One of the strangest subplots of the season. But yeah, I just think he has everything to his game. Low post, outside, off the drive, shake and bake. Like it's hard to see him doing anything close to plateau. That dude's just going to take huge strides. And I think Jaylen Brown will too. But I'm just a huge believer in Jason Tatum's complete skill set.
The only thing that I think may make Jaylen Brown better is I think Jaylen Brown has the potential to be an elite perimeter defensive player just with his athleticism, his length, his height. And I know Jason Tatum is long and Tatum length is insane, but I don't know if he has the athleticism to kind of switch out on the perimeter. I see him more as a guy who guards bigs. I just feel like right now, Jaylen Brown's probably your go-to defender on this team. If you want to stop any wing or any guard, you're going to put Jaylen Brown on. Maybe Marcus Smart just because he's insane, and that always helps. But I really think that Jaylen Brown has this potential to be an elite defensive player, similar in the likes of Kawhi. I don't know if he's ever going to be Kawhi level, but I think that's his potential. So I agree with you just with Tatum's frame and size and his ability to score now. I think he has much better offensive potential, but Jaylen, I think, has the edge on defense. And it's a good thing that the Celtics have both of them because that's a outstanding young core moving forward.
It ain't bad. Certainly ain't bad. I look forward to Hank's hit piece on Jaylen Brown in 2 years.
Hank. This is the last Rain and Jay's question from Dominikos. I think we already talked about this last week, but let's see if it's updated. The eight teams in the Eastern Conference playoffs are pretty locked in. Are the Pacers the opponent everyone, including the Celtics, wishes to get in the first round? If not, which team is the answer?
I mean, Pacers wouldn't be a horrible team to play in the first round. Miami?
Neither would the Heat.
Miami? Pray that the Pistons make a run. Yeah. I think Indiana and Miami are the two. You want to avoid Philadelphia because they have so much young talent. You want to avoid Milwaukee because they have Giannis. Wizards? I don't think the Wizards are that good, especially like it's getting close to the end of the season. John Wall still hasn't returned. Who knows what he's going to be like. So I don't think the Celtics would love to play the Wizards in the first round, but I don't think the Wizards are as good as they were last year this season.
Oh, this leads me to another question, which I just remember seeing, is how important do you think the one seed is to the Celtics, and how likely it is that you think they get it? They actually play the Raptors twice, I think a little home and home in the last 2 weeks of the season. But if Cleveland's going to end up being the three seed, there's a classic like question, do you like want to avoid them in a possible round two matchup? Or if you're going to be succeed, you're going to have to beat the Cavs no matter what. So maybe it doesn't really matter when you get them.
I mean, I think it'd be best to avoid the Cavs as long as possible. But the one seed seems unlikely. I think the Raptors are just – their schedule the rest of the way isn't that difficult, I believe. And they've kicked the shit out of bad teams throughout this whole season. So I anticipate them finishing out the season well. I think it's going to be tough for the Celtics to catch them, even though they do have the one-on-one games.
The Celtics have a pretty easy schedule the rest of the way. There's not really, after this Wolves game coming up and those two games against Toronto, they're not really playing that many solid teams. I mean, the Thunder have talent, but there's a lot of games against the just bad teams in the East and things like that. So the Celtics have a chance. I mean, I agree with you. You'd rather play Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals, but I ultimately don't think it matters that much. We gotta wrap this up because we've been going on for a while. So let me ask you, let's transition to the reigning junk. Who would win in a game of one-on-one, you or Brad Stevens? This is from Adi Joseph from CBS Sports.
This is maybe my favorite question of the year. Brad is without question in better shape than I am, which is sad. I'm considerably younger. I should be in better shape, but he's definitely in better shape. He averaged 27 as a senior in high school. He's the school leading scorer, or at least he left his school as the leading scorer. I think Brad, man. As much as it pains me to say, I think Brad would beat me.
Here's the thing. Here's where I maybe give you the edge. Is this is one-on-one. This is about getting buckets. This isn't about like throwing a nice bounce pass or communication on defense. Although kind of like if it was tryouts to try and make a team, Brad Stevens would wipe the floor with you. But since it's just buckets, I have faith in the kid just to, in your pull-up jumpers and your shit-talking, which I think is very important one-on-one. I don't know if Brad Stevens has the mindset to be able to even like – to even try and like take people off the dribble. That's not how he thinks about basketball. Basketball is a 5-on-5 team game to him. So I don't know what his 1-on-1 game
would
be.
I mean, the man
like.
Averaged 27 in high school.
That's... Yeah, but he probably implemented amazing motion offense while doing so. It's not like I don't see him like crossing you up. Like I don't know what his offensive game would be.
Yeah, it would be a war. I think we need to make it happen. I think we need to make it happen.
I think we should.
That would be
all right. Yeah, I think you should
fun.
Challenge him in your next scrum to one-on-one.
As long as you go there to film it.
I'll definitely be there. I'll commentate. All right, let's rip through these reigning junks. Rank these three celebrations, the Yabu Dab, the Marcus Kip-Up, or the Jalen Kyrie third eye.
Okay. The Yabu –
CJ Arruda.
The Yabu dab is number one to me.
Obviously.
And I know other people have dabbed before, and I know other people have done the bow and arrow before. I don't know if anyone has ever done it together, and there's just a special joy about...
No one has ever been the dancing bear before either.
Yeah, there's just a special joy about Yabu celebration. Marcus Smart's kip up, I'm going to put that number two.
But it wasn't even a celebration. It was fucking dope, but it wasn't like he was celebrating. He was literally just trying. He doesn't even remember doing it. He was just trying to get up off the ground.
Yeah, but I mean, he put some serious martial arts into it, and then said he was just doing flips in the hood when he was younger, that he never had any gymnastics training. So that quote puts it to number two. Also, what is the third eye thing?
Was that from
Fireball Z or something? Did someone send me that was from Fireball Z? I can't get on board.
It's called Dragon Ball Z. I thought it was like Kyrie talking about how the all-seeing eye and like the crazy stuff that he believes in. I don't know. I wasn't really a big Dragon Ball Z guy, but I know enough to know it wasn't Fireball Z.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Just because of the confusion, it's going to have to be ranked last.
Dragon Ball Z, Fireball Z, it's either way, it's going last. I can't have it higher than the kip up. So, sorry, guy. I mean, it was funny. It was embracing weird Celtics Twitter. It was everything in some ways, but I can't get over the tie to Fireball Z.
All right, we got two more left, and they're both about Weird Celtics Twitter. So the first, who is your starting five of Weird Celtics Twitter? Obviously the Riffs man.
The Riffs man.
I'm going to throw my man Sammy Sheehan in there.
Lucky's
and
Pipe.
And his hot wife, which Lucky's Pipe is a meme machine.
Yeah.
Jack Michael, also a meme machine. They just push each other to get better. The fifth is difficult. There's a lot of different people out there.
I mean, you're the authority on Weird Celtics Twitter.
I don't know if I'm full weird, though. I feel like because I have a credential, I don't necessarily count. But I'd be happy to take that honor. But I don't know. It's a difficult process after those. I feel like those are the core four. And then we have a question from Tiff Tripp. Will the application process for Weird Celtics Twitter be more stringent now that it's picked up by the mainstream media?
No.
You want to know why? Because Celtics Twitter is a meritocracy. You have to come with the memes. You have to come with the posts. It's all about content. It's not about personalities other than the Riffs man, who's a cult of personality. But you got to come with just some good shit posting, some good jokes, some good goofs. As long as you got the content, anyone's welcome. So I don't think it's going to be – maybe more people will try to be weird and the talent pool will get more diluted. But I don't know. I think as long as you come correct with the weirdness, you're going to be accepted here.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think you're right. I mean, Celtics Twitter is just a beautiful thing, man. Everything about it is just glorious. It's a fun way to consume the sport. I don't know what I would do without Twitter.
Yeah, no, it's. I'm so glad it got so much weirder this year. But thanks to Twitter for giving us all these questions and providing us with more great content. I'm about out of this, and I know you normally get angry when I close it up. So I'm going to leave that to you.
Ooh, I appreciate that. And I'll just leave it there. You basically close it up for us. We are the only Monday through Friday Celtics podcast. We are the greatest Celtics podcast ever. And that's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah.